Sazed reached out, running his fingers along one of the marks. Though the soil here in the Eastern Dominance held far more clay than soil did in the north, it was still more black than it was brown. Ash falls came even this far south. Ashless soil, washed clean and fertilized, was a luxury used only for the ornamental plants of noble gardens. The rest of the world had to do what it could with untreated soil.
"You say that he was alone when he died?" Sazed asked, turning to the small cluster of villagers standing behind him.
A leather-skinned man nodded.
"Like I said, Master Terraceman, he was just standing there, no one else about. He paused, then he fell and wiggled on the ground for a bit. After that, he just stopped moving."
Sazed turned back to the corpse, studying the twisted muscles, the face locked in a mask of pain. Sazed had brought his medical copper mind, the metal armband wrapped around his upper right arm, and he reached into it with his mind, pulling out some of the memorized books he had stored therein. Yes, there were some diseases that killed with shakes and spasms. They rarely took a man so suddenly, but it sometimes happened. If it hadn't been for other circumstances, Sazed would have paid the death little heed.
"Please repeat to me again what you saw," Sazed asked.
The leather-skinned man at the front of the group, Tyr, paled slightly. He was in an odd position. His natural desire for notoriety would make him want to gossip about his experience. However, doing so could earn the distrust of his superstitious fellows.
"I was just passing by, Master Terraceman," Tyr said. "On the path 20 yards yon. I seen old Jed work in his field. A hard worker he was. Some of us took a break when the lords left, but old Jed just kept on. Guess he knew we'd be needing food for the winter, lords or no lords."
Tyr paused, then glanced to the side.
"I know what people say, Master Terraceman, but I seen what I seen. It was day when I passed, but there was mist in the valley here. It stopped me because I've never been out in the mist. My wife'll vouch me that. I was going to turn back, and then I seen old Jed. He was just working away as if he hadn't seen the mist. I was going to call out to him, but before I could, he just... Well, like I told you, I seen him standing there. Then he froze. The mist swirled about him a bit. Then he began to jerk and twist, like something really strong was holding him and shaking him. He fell. Didn't get up after that."
Still kneeling, Sazed looked back at the corpse. Tyr apparently had a reputation for tall tales. Yet the body was a chilling corroboration, not to mention Sazed's own experience several weeks before. Mist. During the day. Sazed stood, turning toward the villagers.
"Please fetch for me a shovel."
Nobody helped him dig the grave. It was slow, muggy work in the southern heat, which was strong despite the advent of autumn. The clay earth was difficult to move, but fortunately Sazed had a bit of extra stored-up strength inside a pewter mind, and he tapped it for help. He needed it, for he wasn't what one would call an athletic man. Tall and long-limbed, he had the build of a scholar, and still wore the colorful robes of a terrace steward. He also still kept his head shaved, after the manner of the station he had served in for the first 40-some years of his life. He didn't wear much of his jewelry now. He didn't want to tempt highway bandits. But his earlobes were stretched out and pierced with numerous holes for earrings. Tapping strength from his pewter mind enlarged his muscles slightly, giving him the build of a stronger man. Even with the extra strength, however, his steward's robes were stained with sweat and dirt by the time he finished digging. He rolled the body into the grave and stood quietly for a moment. The man had been a dedicated farmer. Sazed searched through his religion's copper mind for an appropriate theology. He started with an index, one of the many that he had created. When he had located an appropriate religion, he pulled free detailed memories about its practices. The writings entered his mind as fresh as when he had just finished memorizing them. They would fade with time, like all memories. However, he intended to place them back in the copper mine long before that happened. It was the way of the Keeper, the method by which his people retained enormous wealths of information. This day, the memories he selected were of the Haddah, a southern religion with an agricultural deity. Like most religions, which had been oppressed during the time of the Lord Ruler, the Haddah faith was 1,000 years extinct. Following the dictates of the Haddah funeral ceremony, Sazed walked over to a nearby tree, or at least one of the shrub-like plants that passed for trees in this area. He broke off a long branch, the peasants watching him curiously, and carried it back to the grave. He stooped down and drove it into the dirt at the bottom of the hole, just beside the corpse's head. Then he stood and began to shovel dirt back into the grave. The peasants watched him with dull eyes.
"So depressed," Sazed thought.
The Eastern Dominance was the most chaotic and unsettled of the 5 inner dominances. The only men in this crowd were well past their prime. The press gangs had done their work efficiently. The husbands and fathers of this village were likely dead on some battlefield that no longer mattered. It was hard to believe that anything could actually be worse than the Lord Ruler's oppression. Sazed told himself that these people's pain would pass, that they would someday know prosperity because of what he and the others had done. Yet he had seen farmers forced to slaughter each other, had seen children starve because some despot had requisitioned a village's entire food supply. He had seen thieves kill freely because the Lord Ruler's troops no longer patrolled the canals. He had seen chaos, death, hatred, and disorder. And he couldn't help but acknowledge that he was partially to blame. He continued to refill the hole. He had been trained as a scholar and a domestic attendant. He was a Terraceman steward, the most useful, most expensive, and most prestigious of servants in the Final Empire. That meant almost nothing now. He'd never dug a grave, but he did his best, trying to be reverent as he piled dirt on the corpse. Surprisingly, about halfway through the process, the peasants began to help him, pushing dirt from the pile into the hole.
"Perhaps there is hope for these yet," Sazed thought, thankfully letting one of the others take his shovel and finish the work.
When they were done, the very tip of the Haddah branch breached the dirt at the head of the grave.
"Why'd you do that?" Tyr asked, nodding to the branch.
Sazed smiled.
"It is a religious ceremony, Goodman Tyr. If you please, there is a prayer that should accompany it."
"A prayer? Something from the Steel Ministry?"
Sazed shook his head.
"No, my friend. It is a prayer from a previous time. A time before the Lord Ruler."
The peasants eyed each other, frowning. Tyr just rubbed his wrinkled chin. They all remained quiet, however, as Sazed said a short Haddah prayer. When he finished, he turned toward the peasants.
"It was known as the religion of Haddah. Some of your ancestors might have followed it, I think. If any of you wish, I can teach you of its precepts."
The assembled crowd stood quietly. There weren't many of them, 2 dozen or so, mostly middle-aged women and a few older men. There was a single young man with a club leg. Sazed was surprised that he'd lived so long on a plantation. Most lords killed invalids to keep them from draining resources.
"When is the Lord Ruler coming back?" asked a woman.
"I do not believe that he will," Sazed said.
"Why did he abandon us?"
"It is a time of change," Sazed said. "Perhaps it is also time to learn of other truths, other ways."
The group of people shuffled quietly. Sazed sighed quietly. These people associated faith with the Steel Ministry and its obligators. Religion wasn't something that Ska worried about, save perhaps to avoid it when possible.
"The Keepers spent 1,000 years gathering and memorizing the dying religions of the world," Sazed thought. Who would have thought that now, with the Lord Ruler gone, people wouldn't care enough to want what they'd lost? Yet he found it hard to think ill of these people. They were struggling to survive, their already harsh world suddenly made unpredictable. They were tired. Was it any wonder that talk of beliefs long forgotten failed to interest them? Come, Sazed said, turning toward the village. There are other things, more practical things, that I can teach you. And I am the one who betrayed Alendi, for I now know that he must never be allowed to complete his quest. 5. Vin could see signs of anxiety reflected in the city. Workers milled anxiously, and markets bustled with an edge of concern, showing that same apprehension that one might see in a cornered rodent. Frightened, but not sure what to do. Doomed, with nowhere to run. Many had left the city during the last year. Noblemen fleeing, merchants seeking some other place of business. Yet at the same time, the city had swelled with an influx of ska. They had somehow heard of Ellen's proclamation of freedom, and had come with optimism, or at least as much optimism as an overworked, underfed, repeatedly beaten populace could manage. And so, despite predictions that Luthadel would soon fall, despite whispers that its army was small and weak, the people had stayed. Worked. Lived. Just as they always had. The life of a ska had never been very certain. It was still strange for Vin to see the market so busy. She walked down Kenton Street, wearing her customary trousers and buttoned shirt, thinking about the time when she'd visited the street during the days before the collapse. It had been the quiet home of some exclusive tailoring shops. When Elland had abolished the restrictions on ska merchants, Kenton Street had changed. The thoroughfare had blossomed into a wild bazaar of shops, pushcarts, and tents. In order to target the newly empowered and newly waged ska workers, the shop owners had altered their selling methods. Where once they had coaxed with rich window displays, they now called and demanded, using criers, salesmen, and even jugglers to try to attract trade. The street was so busy that Vin usually avoided it, and this day was even worse than most. The arrival of the army had sparked a last-minute flurry of buying and selling, the people trying to get ready for whatever was to come. There was a grim tone to the atmosphere. Fewer street performers, more yelling. Ellen had ordered all 8 city gates barred, so flight was no longer an option. Vin wondered how many of the people regretted their decision to stay. She walked down the street with a businesslike step, hands clasped to keep the nervousness out of her posture. Even as a child, an urchin on the streets of 12 different cities, she hadn't liked crowds. It was hard to keep track of so many people, hard to focus with so much going on. As a child, she'd stayed near the edges of crowds, hiding, venturing out to snatch the occasional fallen coin or ignored bit of food. She was different now. She forced herself to walk with a straight back and kept her eyes from glancing down or looking for places to hide. She was getting so much better, but seeing the crowds reminded her of what she had once been, what she would always, at least in part, still be. As if in response to her thoughts, a pair of street urchins scampered through the throng, a large man in a baker's apron screaming at them. There were still urchins in Ellen's new world. In fact, as she considered it, paying the ska population probably made for a far better street life for urchins. There were more pockets to pick, more people to distract the shop owners, more scraps to go around, and more hands to feed beggars. It was difficult to reconcile her childhood with such a life. To her, a child on the street was someone who learned to be quiet and hide, someone who went out at night to search through garbage. Only the most brave of urchins had dared cut purses. Ska lives had been worthless to many noblemen. During her childhood, Vin had known several urchins who had been killed or maimed by passing noblemen who found them offensive. Helen's laws might not have eliminated the poor, something he so much wanted to do, but he had improved the lives of even the street urchins. For that, among other things, she loved him. There were still some noblemen in the crowd, men who had been persuaded by Ellen or circumstances that their fortunes would be safer in the city than without. They were desperate, weak, or adventuresome. Vin watched one man pass, surrounded by a group of guards. He didn't give her a second glance. To him, her simple clothing was reason enough to ignore her. No noblewoman would dress as she did. "Is that what I am?" she wondered, pausing beside a shop window, looking over the books inside, the sale of which had always been a small but profitable market for the idle imperial nobility. She also used the glass reflection to make certain no one snuck up behind her. "Am I a noble woman?" It could be argued that she was noble simply by association. The king himself loved her, had asked her to marry him, and she had been trained by the survivor of Hath-Sin. Indeed, her father had been noble, even if her mother had been Ska. Vin reached up, fingering the simple bronze earring that was the only thing she had as a memento of mother. It wasn't much. But then Vin wasn't sure she wanted to think about her mother all that much. The woman had, after all, tried to kill Vin. In fact, she had killed Vin's full sister. Only the actions of Rean, Vin's half-brother, had saved her. He had pulled Vin, bloody, from the arms of a woman who had shoved the earring into Vin's ear just moments before. And still, Vin kept it. As a reminder of sorts. The truth was, she didn't feel like a noblewoman. At times, she thought she had more in common with her insane mother than she did with the aristocracy of Ellen's world. The balls and parties she had attended before the collapse, they had been a charade, a dreamlike memory. They had no place in this world of collapsing governments and nightly assassinations. Plus, Vin's part in the balls, pretending to be the girl Valette Renou, had always been a sham. She pretended still. Pretended not to be the girl who had grown up starving on the streets, a girl who had been beaten far more often than she had been befriended. Vin sighed, turning from the window. The next shop, however, drew her attention despite herself. It contained ball gowns. The shop was empty of patrons. Few thought of gowns on the eve of an invasion. Vin paused before the open doorway, held almost as if she were metal being pulled. Inside, dressing dummies stood posed in majestic gowns. Vin looked up at the garments, with their tight waists and tapering bell-like skirts. She could almost imagine she was at a ball, soft music in the background, tables draped in perfect white, Elland standing up on his balcony, leafing through a book. She almost went in. But why bother? The city was about to be attacked. Besides, the garments were expensive. It had been different when she'd spent Kelsier's money. Now she spent Ellen's money. And Ellen's money was the kingdom's money. She turned from the gowns and walked back out onto the street. "Those aren't me anymore. Valette is useless to Ellen. He needs a mistborn, not an uncomfortable girl in a gown that she doesn't quite fill." Her wounds from the night before, now firm bruises, were a reminder of her place. They were healing well, she'd been burning pewter heavily all day, but she'd be stiff for a while yet. Vin quickened her pace, heading for the livestock pens. As she walked, however, she caught sight of someone tailing her. Well, perhaps tailing was too generous a word. The man certainly wasn't doing a very good job of going unnoticed. He was balding on top, but wore the sides of his hair long. He wore a simple Ska's smock, a single-piece tan garment that was stained dark with ash. Great, Vin thought. There was another reason she avoided the market, or any place where crowds of Ska gathered. She sped up again, but the man hurried as well. Soon his awkward movements gained attention. But instead of cursing him, most people paused reverently. Soon others joined him, and Vin had a small crowd trailing her. A part of her wanted to just slap down a coin and shoot away. Yes, Vin thought to herself wryly, use allomancy in the daylight. That'll make you inconspicuous. So, sighing, she turned to confront the group. None of them looked particularly threatening. The men wore trousers and dull shirts. The women wore one-piece utilitarian dresses. Several more men wore single-piece, ash-covered smocks. Priests of the Survivor.
Lady Eyre,
one of them said, approaching and falling to his knees.
Don't call me that, Vin said quietly.
The priest looked up at her.
Please, we need direction. We have cast off the Lord Ruler. What do we do now?
Vin took a step backward. Had Kelsier understood what he was doing? He had built up the Ska's faith in him, then had died a martyr to turn them in rage against the final empire. What had he thought would happen after that? Could he have foreseen the Church of the Survivor? Had he known that they would replace the Lord Ruler with Kelsier himself as God? The problem was, Kelsier had left his followers with no doctrine. His only goal had been to defeat the Lord Ruler, partially to get his revenge, partially to seal his legacy, and partially, Vin hoped, because he had wanted to free the Ska. But now what? These people must feel as she did, set adrift, with no light to guide them. Vin could not be that light.
I'm not Kelsier, she said quietly, taking another step backward.
We know, one of the men said. You're his heir. He passed on, and this time you survived.
Please,
a woman said, stepping forward, holding a young child in her arms.
Lady Eyre, if the hand that struck down the Lord Ruler could touch my child.
Vin tried to back away further, but realized she was up against another crowd of people. The woman stepped closer, and Vin finally raised an uncertain hand to the baby's forehead.
Thank you,
the woman said.
You'll protect us, won't you, Lady Eyre?
Asked a young man, no older than Elland, with a dirty face but honest eyes.
The priests say that you'll stop that army out there, that its soldiers won't be able to enter the city while you're here.
That was too much for her. Vin mumbled a half-hearted response, but turned and pushed her way through the crowd. The group of believers didn't follow her, fortunately. She was breathing deeply, though not from exertion, by the time she slowed. She moved into an alley between two shops, standing in the shade, wrapping her arms around herself. She had spent her life learning to remain unnoticed, to be quiet and unimportant. Now she could be none of those things. What did the people expect of her? Did they really think that she could stop an army by herself? That was one lesson she'd learned very early into her training. Mistborn weren't invincible. One man she could kill. 10 men could give her trouble. An army? Vin held herself and took a few calming breaths. Eventually, she moved back out onto the busy street. She was near her destination now, a small open-sided tent surrounded by 4 pens. The merchant lounged by it, a scruffy man who had hair on only half of his head, the right half. Vin stood for a moment, trying to decide if the odd hairstyle was due to disease, injury, or preference. The man perked up when he saw her standing at the edge of his pens. He brushed himself off, throwing up a small amount of dust. Then he sauntered up to her, smiling with what teeth he still had, acting as if he hadn't heard, or didn't care, that there was an army just outside.
"Ah, young lady," he said. "Looking for a pup? I've got some wee scamps that any girl is sure to love. Here, let me grab one. You'll agree it's the cutest thing you ever seen."
Vin folded her arms as the man reached down to grab a puppy from one of the pens.
"Actually," she said, "I was looking for a wolfhound."
The merchant looked up.
"Wolfhound, miss? 'Tis no pet for a girl like yourself. Mean brutes, those. Let me find you a nice bobby.
Nice dogs, those. Smart, too.
No, Vin said, drawing him up short. You will bring me a wolfhound. The man paused again, looking at her, scratching himself in several undignified places.
Well, I guess I can see.
He wandered toward the pen farthest from the street. Vin waited quietly, nose downturned at the smell, as the merchant yelled at a few of his animals, selecting an appropriate one. Eventually, he pulled a leashed dog up to Vin. It was a wolfhound, if a small one, but it had sweet, docile eyes and an obviously pleasant temperament.
"The runt of the litter," the merchant said. "A good animal for a young girl, I'd say. Will probably make an excellent hunter, too. These wolfhounds, they can smell better than any beast you seen."
Vin reached for her coin purse, but paused, looking down at the dog's panting face. It almost seemed to be smiling at her.
"Oh, for the Lord Ruler's sake," she snapped, pushing past the dog and master, stalking toward the back pens.
"Young lady?"
the merchant asked, following uncertainly. Vin scanned the wolfhounds. Near the back, she spotted a massive black and gray beast. It was chained to a post, and it regarded her defiantly, a low growl rising in its throat. Vin pointed.
"How much for that one in the back?"
"That?" the merchant asked. "Good lady, that's a watch beast. It's meant to be set loose on the Lord's grounds to attack anyone who enters. It's one of the meanest things you'll ever see."
"Perfect,"
Vin said, pulling out some coins.
"Good lady, I couldn't possibly sell you that beast. Not possibly at all. Why, I'll bet it weighs half again as much as you do."
Vin nodded, then pulled open the pen gate and strode in. The merchant cried out, but Vin walked right up to the wolfhound. He began to bark wildly at her, frothing.
"Sorry about this," Vin thought.
Then, burning pewter, she ducked in and slammed her fist into the dog's head. The animal froze, wobbled, then fell unconscious in the dirt. The merchant stopped up short beside her, mouth open.
"Leash,"
Vin ordered. He gave her one. She used it to tie the wolfhound's feet together, and then, with a flare of pewter, she threw the animal over her shoulders. She cringed only slightly at the pain in her side. "This thing better not get drool on my shirt," she thought, handing the merchant some coins and walking back toward the palace. Vin slammed the unconscious wolfhound to the floor. The guards had given her some strange looks as she entered the palace, but she was getting used to those. She brushed off her hands.
"What is that?"
Orsior asked. He'd made it back to her rooms at the palace, but his current body was obviously unusable. He'd needed to form muscles in places that men didn't normally have them, to even keep the skeleton together, and while he'd healed his wounds, his body looked unnatural. He still wore the blood-stained clothing from the night before.
"This," Vin said, pointing at the wolfhound, "is your new body."
Orsior paused.
"That? Mistress, that is a dog."
"Yes," Vin said.
"I am a man."
"You're a Chondra," Vin said. "You can imitate flesh and muscle. What about fur?"
The Chondra did not look pleased.
"I cannot imitate it," he said, "but I can use the beast's own fur like I use its bones. However, surely there is..."
"I'm not going to kill for you, Chondra," Vin said. "And even if I did kill someone, I wouldn't let you eat them. Plus, this will be more inconspicuous. People will begin to talk if I keep replacing my stewards with unknown men. I've been telling people for months that I was thinking of dismissing you. Well, I'll tell them that I finally did. Nobody will think to realize that my new pet hound is actually my Chondra."
She turned, nodding toward the carcass.
"This will be very useful. People pay less attention to hounds than they do to humans, and so you'll be able to listen in on conversations."
Orsir's frown deepened.
"I will not do this thing easily. You will need to compel me, by virtue of the contract."
Fine, Vin said. You're commanded. How long will it take?
A regular body only takes a few hours, Orsier said. This could take longer. Getting that much fur to look right will be challenging.
Get started, then, Vin said, turning toward the door. On her way, however, she noticed a small package sitting on her desk. She frowned, walking over and taking off the lid. A small note sat inside. Lady Vin, here is the next alloy you requested. Aluminum is very difficult to acquire, but when a noble family recently left the city, I was able to buy some of their diningware. I do not know if this one will work, but I believe it worth a try. I have mixed the aluminum with 4% copper and found the outcome quite promising. I have read of this composition. It's called Duralumin. Your servant, Tarion. Vin smiled, setting aside the note and removing the rest of the box's contents. A small pouch of metal dust and a thin silvery bar, both presumably of this Duralumin metal. Tarion was a master allomantic metallurgist. Though not an allomancer himself, he had been mixing alloys and creating dusts from mistborn and mistings for most of his life. Vin pocketed both pouch and bar, then turned toward Orsier. The Condor regarded her with a flat expression. "This came for me today?" Vin asked, nodding to the box.
"Yes, mistress," Orsier said. "A few hours ago."
"And you didn't tell me?"
"I'm sorry, mistress," Orsier said in his toneless way. "But you did not command me to tell you if packages arrived."
Vin ground her teeth. He knew how anxiously she'd been waiting for another alloy from Tarion. All of the previous aluminum alloys they'd tried had turned out to be duds. It bothered her to know that there was another allomantic metal out there somewhere, waiting to be discovered. She wouldn't be satisfied until she found it. Orsier just sat where he was, bland expression on his face, unconscious wolfhound on the floor in front of him. "Just get to work on that body," Vin said, spinning and leaving the room to search for Elend. Vin finally found Elend in his study, going over some ledgers with a familiar figure.
"Docs," Vin said.
He'd retired to his rooms soon after his arrival the day before, and she hadn't seen much of him. Doxon looked up and smiled. Stocky, without being fat, he had short, dark hair and still wore his customary half-beard.
"Hello, Vin."
"How was Terrace?" she asked.
"Cold," Doxon replied. "I'm glad to be back, though I wish I hadn't arrived to find that army here."
"Either way, we're glad you've returned, Doxon," Elend said. "The kingdom practically fell apart without you."
"That hardly seems the case," Doxon said, closing his ledger and setting it on the stack. "All things and armies considered, it looks like the royal bureaucracy held together fairly well in my absence. You hardly need me anymore."
"Nonsense," Elend said.
Vin leaned against the door, eyeing the two men as they continued their discussion. They maintained their air of forced joviality. Both were dedicated to making the new kingdom work, even if it meant pretending that they liked each other. Doxon pointed at places in the ledgers, talking about finances and what he'd discovered in the outlying villages under Ellen's control. Vin sighed, glancing across the room. Sunlight streamed through the room's stained-glass rose window, throwing colors across the ledgers and table. Even now, Vin still wasn't accustomed to the casual richness of a noble keep. The window, red and lavender, was a thing of intricate beauty. Yet noblemen apparently found its like so commonplace that they had put this one in the keep's back rooms, in the small chamber that Elend now used as his study. As one might expect, the room was piled with stacks of books. Shelves lined the walls from floor to ceiling, but they were no match for the sheer volume of Ellen's growing collection. She'd never cared much for Ellen's taste in books. They were mostly political or historical works, things with topics as musty as their aged pages. Many of them had once been forbidden by the Steel Ministry, but somehow the old philosophers could make even salacious topics seem boring.
"Anyway," Doxson said, finally closing his ledgers, "I have some things to do before your speech tomorrow, Your Majesty. Did Ham say there's a city defense meeting that evening as well?"
Ellen nodded.
"Assuming I can get the Assembly to agree not to hand the city over to my father, we'll need to come up with a strategy to deal with this army. I'll send someone for you tomorrow night."
"Good," Doxson said.
With that, he nodded to Ellen, winked at Vin, then made his way from the cluttered room. As Doxson shut the door, Ellen sighed, then relaxed back in his oversized plush chair. Vin walked forward.
"He really is a good man, Ellen."
"Oh, I realize he is. Being a good man doesn't always make one likable, however."
"He's nice, too," Vin said. "Sturdy, calm, stable. The crew relied on him."
Even though Doxson wasn't an Allomancer, he had been Kelsier's right-hand man.
"He doesn't like me, Vin," Ellen said. "It's very hard to get along with someone who looks at me like that."
"You're not giving him a fair chance," Vin complained, stopping beside Ellen's chair.
He looked up at her, smiling wanly, his vest unbuttoned, his hair an absolute mess.
"Hmm," he said idly, taking her hand. "I really like that shirt. Red looks good on you."
Vin rolled her eyes, letting him gently pull her into the chair and kiss her. There was a passion to the kiss, a need, perhaps, for something stable. Vin responded, feeling herself relax as she pulled up against him. A few minutes later, she sighed, feeling much better, snuggled into the chair beside him. He pulled her close, leaning the chair back into the window's sunlight. He smiled and glanced at her.
"That's a new perfume you're wearing," Vin snorted, putting her head against his chest.
"It's not perfume, Ellen. It's dog."
"Ah, good," Ellen said. "I was worried that you'd departed from your senses. Now, is there any particular reason why you smell like dog?"
"I went to the market and bought one, then carried it back and fed it to Orsir, so it can be his new body."
Ellen paused.
"Why, Vin, that's brilliant. Nobody will suspect a dog to be a spy. I wonder if anyone's ever thought of that before."
"Someone must have," Vin said. "I mean, it makes such sense. I suspect those who thought of it, however, didn't share the knowledge."
"Good point," Ellen said, relaxing back.
Yet from as close as they were, she could still feel a tension in him.
"Tomorrow's speech," Vin thought. "He's worried about it."
"I must say, however," Ellen said idly, "that I find it a bit disappointing that you're not wearing dog-scented perfume. With your social station, I could see some of the local noblewomen trying to imitate you. That could be amusing indeed."
She leaned up, looking at his smirking face.
"You know, Ellen, sometimes it's bloody difficult to tell when you're teasing and when you're just being dense."
"That makes me more mysterious, right?"
"Something like that," she said, snuggling up against him again.
"Now, see, you don't understand how clever that is of me," he said. "If people can't tell when I'm being an idiot and when I'm being a genius, perhaps they'll assume my blunders are brilliant political maneuverings."
"As long as they don't mistake your actual brilliant moves for blunders."
"That shouldn't be difficult," Ellen said. "I fear I have few enough of those for people to mistake."
Vin looked up with concern at the edge in his voice. He, however, smiled, shifting the topic.
"So, Orsir the dog, will he still be able to go out with you at nights?"
Vin shrugged.
"I guess. I wasn't really planning on bringing him for a while."
"I'd like it if you did take him," Ellen said. "I worry about you out there, every night, pushing yourself so hard."
"I can handle it," Vin said. "Someone needs to watch over you."
"Yes," Ellen said. "But who watches over you?"
"Kelsier."
Even now, that was still her immediate reaction.
She'd known him for less than a year, but that year had been the first in her life that she had felt protected. Kelsier was dead. She, like the rest of the world, had to live without him.
"I know you were hurt when you fought those Allomancers the other night," Ellen said. "It would be really nice for my psyche if I knew someone was with you."
"Akandra's no bodyguard," Vin said.
"I know," Ellen said. "But they're incredibly loyal. I've never heard of one breaking contract. He'll watch out for you."
"I worry about you, Vin. You wonder why I stay up so late scribbling at my proposals? I can't sleep knowing that you might be out there fighting, or worse, lying somewhere in a street, dying because nobody was there to help you."
"I take Orsio with me sometimes."
"Yes," Ellen said. "But I know you find excuses to leave him behind. Kelsier bought you the services of an incredibly valuable servant. I can't understand why you work so hard to avoid him."
Vin closed her eyes.
"Ellen, he ate Kelsier."
"So?" Ellen asked. "Kelsier was already dead. Besides, he himself gave that order."
Vin sighed, opening her eyes.
"I just don't trust that thing, Ellen. The creature is unnatural."
"I know," Ellen said. "My father always kept a Akandra, but Osir is something at least. Please, promise me you'll take him with you."
"All right. But I don't think he's going to like the arrangement much either. He and I didn't get along very well even when he was playing Renu and I his niece."
Ellen shrugged. "He'll hold to his contract. That's what is important."
"He holds to the contract," Vin said, "but only grudgingly. I swear that he enjoys frustrating me."
Ellen looked down at her.
"Vin, Akandra are excellent servants. They don't do things like that."
"No, Ellen," Vin said. "Sazed was an excellent servant. He enjoyed being with people, helping them. I never felt that he resented me. Orsir may do everything I command, but he doesn't like me. He never has. I can tell."
Ellen sighed, rubbing her shoulder.
"Don't you think you might be a little irrational? There's no real reason to hate him so."
"Oh?" Vin asked. "Just like there's no reason you shouldn't get along with Doxson?"
Ellen paused. Then he sighed.
"I guess you have a point," he said.
He continued to rub Vin's shoulder as he stared upward toward the ceiling, contemplative.
"What?" Vin asked.
"I'm not doing a very good job of this, am I?"
"Don't be foolish," Vin said. "You're a wonderful king."
"I might be a passable king, Vin, but I'm not him."
"Who?"
"Kelsier," Ellen said quietly.
"Ellen, nobody expects you to be Kelsier."
"Oh," he said. "That's why Doxson doesn't like me. He hates noblemen. It's obvious in the way that he talks, the way he acts. I don't know if I really blame him, considering the life he's known. Regardless, he doesn't think I should be king. He thinks that Askar should be in my place. Or even better, Kelsier. They all think that."
"That's nonsense, Ellen."
"Really? And if Kelsier still lived, would I be king?" Vin paused. "You see, they accept me, the people, the merchants, even the noblemen. But in the back of their minds, they wish they had Kelsier instead."
"I don't wish that."
"Don't you?"
Vin frowned. Then she sat up, turning so that she was kneeling over Ellen in the reclined chair, their faces just inches apart.
"Don't you ever wonder that, Ellen. Kelsier was my teacher, but I didn't love him. Not like I love you."
Ellen stared into her eyes, then nodded. Vin kissed him deeply, then snuggled down beside him again.
"Why not?" Ellen eventually asked.
"Well, he was old, for one thing."
Ellen chuckled.
"I seem to recall you making fun of my age as well."
"That's different," Vin said. "You're only a few years older than me.
Kelsier was ancient. Vin, 38 is not ancient.
Close enough.
Ellen chuckled again, but she could tell that he wasn't satisfied. Why had she chosen Ellen rather than Kelsier? Kelsier had been the visionary, the hero, the mistborn.
Kelsier was a great man,
Vin said quietly as Ellen began to stroke her hair.
But there were things about him, Ellen. Frightening things. He was intense, reckless, even a little bit cruel, unforgiving. He'd slaughter people without guilt or concern just because they upheld the final empire or worked for the Lord Ruler. I could love him as a teacher and a friend, but I don't think I could ever love, not really love, a man like that. I don't blame him. He was of the streets, like me. When you struggle so hard for life, you grow strong. But you can grow harsh, too. His fault or not, Kelsier reminded me too much of men I knew when I was younger. Kel was a far better person than they. He really could be kind, and he did sacrifice his life for the Ska. However, he was just so hard.
She closed her eyes, feeling Ellen's warmth.
You, Ellen Venture, are a good man. A truly good man.
Good men don't become legends, he said quietly.
Good men don't need to become legends.
She opened her eyes, looking up at him.
They just do what's right anyway.
Ellen smiled. Then he kissed the top of her head and leaned back. They lay there for a time, in a room warm with sunlight, relaxing.
He saved my life once, Ellen finally said.
Who?
Vin asked with surprise. Kelsier? Ellen nodded.
That day after Spook and Orsure were captured, the day Kelsier died. There was a battle in the square when Ham and some soldiers tried to free the captives.
I was there, Vin said, hiding with Breeze and Dox in one of the alleyways.
Really? Ellen said, sounding a bit amused. Because I came looking for you. I thought that they'd arrested you, along with Orsure. He was pretending to be your uncle then. I tried to get to the cages to rescue you.
You did what? Ellen, it was a battlefield in that square. There was an Inquisitor there for the Lord Ruler's sake.
I know, Ellen said, smiling faintly. See, that Inquisitor is the one who tried to kill me. It had its axe raised and everything. And then Kelsier was there. He smashed into the Inquisitor, throwing it to the ground.
Probably just a coincidence, Vin said.
No, Ellen said softly. He meant it, Vin. He looked at me while he struggled with the Inquisitor, and I saw it in his eyes. I've always wondered about that moment. Everyone tells me that Kelsier hated the nobility even more than Dox does.
Vin paused.
He started to change a little at the end, I think.
Change enough that he'd risk himself to protect a random nobleman?
He knew that I loved you, Vin said, smiling faintly. I guess in the end, that proved stronger than his hatred.
I didn't realize.
He trailed off as Vin turned, hearing something. Footsteps approaching. She sat up, and a second later Ham poked his head into the room. He paused when he saw Vin sitting in Ellen's lap, however.
Oh, Ham said. Sorry.
No, wait, Vin said.
Ham poked his head back in, and Vin turned to Ellen.
I almost forgot why I came looking for you in the first place. I got a new package from Tarion today.
Another one? Ellen asked. Vin, when are you going to give this up?
I can't afford to, she said.
It can't be all that important, can it? He asked. I mean, if everybody's forgotten what that last metal does, then it must not be very powerful.
Either that, Vin said, or it was so amazingly powerful that the Ministry worked very hard to keep it a secret.
She slid off of the chair to stand up, then took the pouch and thin bar out of her pocket. She handed the bar to Elland, who sat up in his plush chair. Silvery and reflective, the metal, like the aluminum from which it was made, felt too light to be real. Any allomancer who accidentally burned aluminum had their other metal reserves stripped away from them, leaving them powerless. Aluminum had been kept secret by the Steel Ministry. Vin had only found out about it on the night when she'd been captured by the Inquisitors, the same night she'd killed the Lord Ruler. They had never been able to figure out the proper allomantic alloy of aluminum. Allomantic metals always came in pairs: iron and steel, tin and pewter, copper and bronze, zinc and brass. Aluminum and something. Something powerful, hopefully. Her atium was gone. She needed an edge. Elland sighed, handing back the bar. The last time you tried to burn one of those, it left you sick for 2 days, Vin. I was terrified. It can't kill me, Vin said. Kelsier promised that burning a bad alloy would only make me sick. Elland shook his head. Even Kelsier was wrong on occasion, Vin. Didn't you say that he misunderstood how bronze worked? Vin paused. Ellen's concern was so genuine that she felt herself being persuaded. However, when that army attacks, Elland is going to die. The city's ska might survive. No ruler would be foolish enough to slaughter the people of such a productive city. The king, however, would be killed. She couldn't fight off an entire army, and she could do little to help with preparations. She did know allomancy, however. The better she got at it, the better she'd be able to protect the man she loved. I have to try it, Elland, she said quietly. Club says that Straff won't attack for a few days. He'll need that long to rest his men from the march and scout the city for attack. That means I can't wait. If this metal does make me sick, I'll be better in time to help fight. But only if I try it now. Ellen's face grew grim, but he did not forbid her. He had learned better than that. Instead, he stood. Ham, you think this is a good idea? Ham nodded. He was a warrior. To him, her gamble would make sense. She'd asked him to stay because she'd need someone to carry her back to bed should this go wrong. All right, Elland said, turning back to Vin, looking resigned. Vin climbed into the chair, sat back, then took a pinch of the duralumin dust and swallowed it. She closed her eyes and felt at her allomantic reserves. The common 8 were all there, well stocked. She didn't have any atium or gold, nor did she have either of their alloys. Even if she'd had atium, it was too precious to use except in an emergency, and the other 3 had only marginal usefulness. A new reserve appeared, just as one had the 4 times before. Each time she'd burned an aluminum alloy, she'd immediately felt a blinding headache. You'd think I'd have learned, she thought. Gritting her teeth, she reached inside and burned the new alloy. Nothing happened. Have you tried it yet? Elland asked apprehensively. Vin nodded slowly. No headache, but I'm not sure if the alloy is doing anything or not.
But it's burning? Ham asked.
Vin nodded. She felt the familiar warmth from within, the tiny fire that told her that a metal was burning. She tried moving about a bit, but couldn't distinguish any change to her physical self. Finally, she just looked up and shrugged. Ham frowned.
If it didn't make you sick, then you found the right alloy. Each metal only has 1 valid alloy.
Or, Vin said, that's what we've always been told. Ham nodded.
What alloy was this?
Aluminum and copper, Vin said.
Interesting, Ham said. You don't feel anything at all?
Vin shook her head.
You'll have to practice some more.
Looks like I'm lucky, Vin said, extinguishing the duralumin. Tarion came up with 40 different alloys he thought we could try once we had enough aluminum. This was only the 5th.
40? Elland asked incredulously.
I wasn't aware there were so many metals you could make an alloy from.
You don't have to have two metals to make an alloy, Vin said absently. Just one metal and something else. Look at steel. It's iron and carbon.
40, Elland repeated. And you would have tried them all? Vin shrugged.
Seemed like a good place to start.
Elland looked concerned at that thought, but didn't say anything further. Instead, he turned to Ham. Anyway, Ham, was there something you wanted to see us about?
Nothing important, Ham said. I just wanted to see if Vin was up for some sparring. That army has me feeling antsy, and I figure Vin could still use some practice with the staff.
Vin shrugged.
Sure, why not?
You want to come, El? Ham asked. Get in some practice?
Elland laughed.
And face one of you two? I've got my royal dignity to think of.
Vin frowned slightly, looking up at him.
You really should practice more, Elland. You barely know how to hold a sword, and you're terrible with a dueling cane.
Now see, why would I worry about that when I have you to protect me? Vin's concern deepened.
We can't always be around you, Elland. I'd worry a lot less if you were better at defending yourself.
He just smiled and pulled her to her feet.
I'll get to it eventually, I promise. But not today. I've got too much to think about right now. How about if I just come watch you two? Perhaps I'll pick up something by observation, which is, by the way, the preferable method of weapons training, since it doesn't involve me getting beaten up by a girl.
Vin sighed, but didn't press the point further.
I write this record now, pounding it into a metal slab because I am afraid. Afraid for myself, yes. I admit to being human. If Elendi does return from the Well of Ascension, I am certain that my death will be one of his first objectives. He is not an evil man, but he is a ruthless one. That is, I think, a product of what he has been through.
6. Elland leaned down against the railing, looking in at the sparring yard. Part of him did wish to go out and practice with Vin and Ham. However, the larger part of him just didn't see the point.
Any assassin likely to come after me will be an allomancer, he thought. I could train 10 years and be no match for one of them.
In the yard itself, Ham took a few swings with his staff, then nodded. Vin stepped up, holding her own staff, which was a good foot taller than she was. Watching the two of them, Elland couldn't help remarking on the disparity. Ham had the firm muscles and powerful build of a warrior. Vin looked even thinner than usual, wearing only a tight-buttoned shirt and a pair of trousers with no cloak to mask her size. The inequality was enhanced by Ham's next words.
We're practicing with the staff, not practicing pushing and pulling. Don't use anything but pewter, all right?
Vin nodded. It was the way they often sparred. Ham claimed that there was no substitute for training and practice, no matter how powerful an allomancer one was. He let Vin use pewter, however, because he said the enhanced strength and dexterity was disorienting, unless one was accustomed to it. The sparring field was like a courtyard. Situated in the palace barracks, it had an open-sided hallway built around it. Elland stood in this, roof overhead keeping the red sun out of his eyes. That was nice, for a light ashfall had begun, and occasional flakes of ash floated down from the sky. Elland crossed his arms on the railing. Soldiers passed occasionally in the hallway behind, bustling with activity. Some, however, paused to watch. Vin and Ham's sparring sessions were something of a welcome diversion to the palace guards.
I should be working on my proposal, Elland thought, not standing here watching Vin fight.
But the tension of the last few days had been so pressing that he was finding it difficult to get up the motivation to do yet another read-through of the speech. What he really needed was to just spend a few moments thinking. So he simply watched. Vin approached Ham warily, staff held in a firm two-handed stance.
Once, Elland probably would have found trousers and shirt on a lady to be inappropriate. But he'd been around Vin too long to still be bothered by that. Ball gowns and dresses were beautiful, but there was something right about Vin in simple garb. She wore it more comfortably. Besides, he kind of liked how the tight clothing looked on her. Vin usually let others strike first, and this day was no exception. Staves rapped as Ham engaged her, and despite her size, Vin held her own. After a quick exchange, they both backed away, circling warily.
"My money's on the girl."
Elland turned as he noticed a form limping down the hallway toward him. Clubs stepped up beside Elland, setting a 10 boxing coin down on the railing with a snap. Elland smiled to the general, and Clubs scowled back, which was generally accepted as Clubs' version of a smile. Dachshund excluded, Elland had taken quickly to the other members of Vin's crew. Clubs, however, had taken a little getting used to. The stocky man had a face like a gnarled toadstool, and he always seemed to be squinting in displeasure, an expression usually matched by his tone of voice. However, he was a gifted craftsman, not to mention an allomancer. A smoker, actually, though he didn't get to use his power much anymore. For the better part of a year, Clubs had acted as general of Elland's military forces. Elland didn't know where Clubs had learned to lead soldiers, but the man had a remarkable knack for it. He'd probably gotten the skill in the same place that he'd acquired the scar on his leg, a scar that produced the hobble from which Clubs drew his nickname.
"They're just sparring, Clubs," Elland said. "There won't be a winner." "They'll end with a serious exchange," Clubs said. "They always do."
Elland paused.
"You're asking me to bet against Vin, you know," he noted. "That could be unhealthy." "So?"
Elland smiled, pulling out a coin. Clubs still kind of intimidated him, and he didn't want to risk offending the man.
"Where's that worthless nephew of mine?" Clubs asked as he watched the sparring.
"Spook?" Elland asked.
"He's back? How'd he get into the city?"
Clubs shrugged.
"He left something on my doorstep this morning."
"A gift?"
Clubs snorted. "It was a wood carving from a master carpenter up in Yelva City. The note said, 'I just wanted to show you what real carpenters are up to, old man.'"
Elland chuckled, but trailed off as Clubs eyed him with a discomforting stare.
"Whelp was never this insolent before," Clubs muttered. "I swear you lot have corrupted the lad."
Clubs almost seemed to be smiling. Or was he serious? Elland couldn't ever decide if the man was as crusty as he seemed, or if Elland was the butt of some elaborate joke.
"How is the army doing?" Elland finally asked. "Terribly," Clubs said. "You want an army? Give me more than 1 year to train it. Right now, I'd barely trust those boys against a mob of old women with sticks."
"Great," Elland thought.
"Can't do much right now, though," Clubs grumbled. "Straff is digging in some cursory fortifications, but mostly he's just resting his men. The attack will come by the end of the week."
In the courtyard, Vin and Ham continued to fight. It was slow for the moment, Ham taking time to pause and explain principles or stances. Elland and Clubs watched for a short time as the sparring gradually became more intense, the rounds taking longer, the two participants beginning to sweat as their feet kicked up puffs of ash in the packed, sooty earth. Vin gave Ham a good contest despite the ridiculous differences in strength, reach, and training, and Elland found himself smiling slightly despite himself. She was something special. Elland had realized that when he'd first seen her in the Venture Ballroom nearly 2 years before. He was only now coming to realize how much of an understatement "special" was. A coin snapped against the wooden railing.
"My money's on Vin, too."
Elland turned with surprise. The man who had spoken was a soldier who had been standing with the others watching behind. Elland frowned.
"Who?"
Then Elland cut himself off.
The beard was wrong, the posture too straight, but the man standing behind him was familiar.
"Spook?"
Elland asked incredulously. The teenage boy smiled behind an apparently fake beard.
"Wasn't the wear of calling out?"
Elland's head immediately began to hurt.
"Lord Ruler, don't tell me you've gone back to the dialect." "Oh, just for the occasional nostalgic quip,"
Spook said with a laugh. His words bore traces of his Easterner accent. During the first few months Elland had known the boy, Spook had been utterly unintelligible. Fortunately, the boy had grown out of using his street cant, just as he'd managed to grow out of most of his clothing. Well over 6 feet tall, the 16-year-old young man hardly resembled the gangly boy Elland had met a year before. Spook leaned against the railing beside Elland, adopting a teenage boy's lounging posture and completely destroying his image as a soldier, which, indeed, he wasn't.
"Why the costume, Spook?" Elland asked with a frown.
Spook shrugged.
"I'm no Mistborn. We more mundane spies have to find ways to get information without flying up to windows and listening outside."
"How long you been standing there?" Clubs asked, glaring at his nephew.
"Since before you got here, Uncle Grumbles," Spook said. "And in answer to your question, I got back a couple days ago. Before Doxon, actually. I just thought I'd take a bit of a break before I went back to duty."
"I don't know if you've noticed, Spook," Elland said, "but we're at war. There isn't a lot of time to take breaks."
Spook shrugged. "I just didn't want you to send me away again. If there's going to be war here, I want to be around. You know, for the excitement."
Clubs snorted.
"And where did you get that uniform?"
Well... Spook glanced to the side, displaying just a hint of the uncertain boy Elland had known. Clubs grumbled something about insolent boys, but Elland just laughed and clapped Spook on the shoulder. The boy looked up, smiling. Though he'd been easy to ignore at first, he was proving as valuable as any of the other members of Vin's former crew. As a tin eye, a misting who could burn tin to enhance his senses, Spook could listen to conversations from far away, not to mention notice distant details.
"Anyway, welcome back," Elland said. "What's the word from the west?"
Spook shook his head.
"I hate to sound too much like Uncle Krusty over there, but the news isn't good. You know those rumors about the Lord Ruler's Atium being in Luthadel? Well, they're back. Stronger this time."
"I thought we were past that," Elland said. Breeze and his team had spent the better part of 6 months spreading rumors and manipulating the warlords into believing that the Atium must have been hidden in another city, since Elland hadn't found it in Luthadel.
"Guess not," Spook said. "And I think someone's spreading these rumors intentionally. I've been on the street long enough to sense a planted story, and this rumor smells wrong. Someone really wants the warlords to focus on you."
"Great," Elland thought.
"You don't know where Breeze is, do you?"
Spook shrugged. But he no longer seemed to be paying attention to Elland. He was watching the sparring. Elland glanced back toward Vin and Ham. As Clubs had predicted, the two had fallen into a more serious contest. There was no more instruction. There were no more quick, repetitive exchanges. They sparred in earnest, fighting in a swirling melee of staffs and dust. Ash flew around them, blown up by the wind of their attacks, and even more soldiers paused in the surrounding hallways to watch. Elland leaned forward. There was something intense about a duel between two Allomancers. Vin tried an attack. Ham, however, swung simultaneously, his staff blurringly quick. Somehow Vin got her own weapon up in time, but the power of Vin's blow threw her back in a tumble. She hit the ground on one shoulder. She gave barely a grunt of pain, however, and somehow got a hand beneath her, throwing herself up to land on her feet. She skidded for a moment, retaining her balance, holding her staff up.
Pewter, Elland thought. It made even a clumsy man dexterous, and for a person normally graceful like Vin.
Vin's eyes narrowed,
her innate stubbornness showing in the set of her jaw, the displeasure in her face. She didn't like being beaten, even when her opponent was obviously stronger than she was. Elend stood up straight, intending to suggest an end to the sparring. At that moment, Vin dashed forward. Ham brought his staff up expectantly, swinging as Vin came within reach. She ducked to the side, passing within inches of the attack, then brought her weapon around and slammed it into the back of Ham's staff, throwing him off balance. Then she ducked in for the attack. Ham, however, recovered quickly. He let the force of Vin's blow spin him around, and he used the momentum to bring his staff around in a powerful blow aimed directly at Vin's chest. Elend cried out. Vin jumped. She didn't have metal to push against, but that didn't seem to matter. She sprang a good 7 feet in the air, easily cresting Ham's staff. She flipped as the swing passed beneath her, her fingers brushing the air just above the weapon, her own staff spinning in a one-handed grip. Vin landed, her staff already howling in a low swing, its tip throwing up a line of ash as it ran along the ground. It slammed into the back of Ham's legs. The blow swept Ham's feet out from beneath him, and he cried out as he fell. Vin jumped into the air again. Ham slammed to the earth on his back, and Vin landed on his chest. Then she calmly rapped him on the forehead with the end of her staff. "I win." Ham lay, looking dazed, Vin crouching on his chest. Dust and ash settled quietly in the courtyard. "Damn," Spook whispered, voicing a sentiment that seemed to be shared by the dozen or so watching soldiers. Finally, Ham chuckled.
"Fine. You beat me. Now, if you would, kindly get me something to drink while I try to massage some feeling back into my legs."
Vin smiled, hopping off his chest and scampering away to do as requested. Ham shook his head, climbing to his feet. Despite his words, he walked with barely a limp. He'd probably have a bruise, but it wouldn't bother him for long. Pewter not only enhanced one's strength, balance, and speed, it also made one's body innately stronger. Ham could shrug off a blow that would have shattered Ellen's legs.